Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This episode is done with my buddy Peter Overzet from RotoViz and 444.com. I think you guys are going to really like this episode. We get into a lot of topics that are near and dear to our hearts and to the listeners of this show's hearts. You know, we talk about what it's like to be constantly plugged in, and, you know, a topic that comes up a lot on the show, fantasy football in 2018, what it's like to be in a bunch of different seasonal leagues, the ROI that happens when you're in a bunch of different leagues, and cover a lot of topics that, you know, that you would just find in Peter and I's Twitter feeds. And of course, we do a little bit of talk about Peter Manzanelli, but if you guys want to hear the full podcast where we go into what it's like to be the Mans, what it's like to produce that content, we actually did a bonus episode that can be found over on the Patreon version of this feed, where you get multiple bonus podcasts per week, access to the TakeCast Discord, and a lot of other cool stuff. Of course, if you don't want to support the show on the Patreon, you can always leave a rating and review on iTunes. And of course, we are sponsored by none other than Daily Roto. Right now, it is PGA season, and Daily Roto has the best tools in the industry for harnessing golf projections. Their projections are provided by Data Golf. You can do all sorts of cool things with their tools. They have a customizable optimizer where you can balance out the projections based on long-term and short-term form. You can add in weights for course history. And the tools that I have been using recently have been to bet golf matchups, so head-to-head bets. And also, they have an EV calculator for top 5, top 20, and outright bets that has been pretty successful and helpful for me. I think you guys will like it as well. And now we will get into the show. All right, boys, bringing in my pal Peter Overzet into the show. You guys probably know him from his time at RotoViz and 444 and his alter ego as the Mans, Peter Manzanelli. An idea I've actually been kind of badgering Peter about doing this for a while is I want to get behind the mask of the Mans, but we're going to talk about all sorts of cool stuff, fantasy football. We're going to continue the thread that we started with Harmon last week, talking about fitness and like trying to be not a big fat couch slug, which is definitely a drawback to our chosen profession. But before we get into anything else, Peter, first of all, introduce yourself. And every time I have someone on the show, I just want to know, how did you end up here? Why football? Why fantasy football? Why content production?
Yeah, dude. No, I'm excited to be on the TakeCast. I like the idea of you getting your full-time gig, locking up that contract, and then you start phoning it in with your guest bookings. You're like, oh, I'll just get Peter or whatever. You kind of, you know, really started to lower your standards after you got that big paycheck, Davis.
Yeah, no, I got hooked up at Daily Roto, and then I was like, now it's just, I'm not going to go hard on booking guests. It's just going to be all my friends. Like, Mayo's going to be on the show. Hopefully, Dink will come on the show. And I just won't have to go outside of our little social circle on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, a peek behind the curtain is you actually wanted Hermsmeyer for the seventh time, but he wasn't available this morning.
Yeah, Hermsmeyer is busy investigating if he's going to buy another winery, so he was unable to make his seventh appearance on the show.
That's right. No, dude, but I am excited to be here. To your question, yeah, how I got started, I actually, through a kind of a roundabout way, I mean, I always played fantasy football, so I was super into it from, you know, a player standpoint. But as far as content, I started doing improv comedy in Cambridge around like 2010, 2011. And I met some of my good buddies, other comedians, and we found out that we were all into fantasy sports as well. And the theater that we were at, they were kind of really loose with the types of shows you could pitch. And we're like, what if we did a fantasy football comedic show? And so we got together and we put on this live show that was like a mixture of improv and sketch, but it was just like all inside joke, like fantasy football type stuff. Like we had the Chris Hansen To Catch a Predator sketch, but it was like you were pulling a fast one over your league mate for a trade. Just like the silliest like fantasy football comedy you could imagine. And that kind of then led into a podcast that we did, the Fantasy Football Comedy Hour, and we did videos and all that stuff. And it was kind of just this thing where I was like, oh, I can take my two hobbies, comedy and fantasy football, and just merge them into one and have a demographic of a very, very small amount of people who would enjoy it.
That's pretty cool. I actually assumed that maybe you would have like a background in writing or something. Like you were going to tell me that you got your start in all of this, like writing like a failed like Simpsons spec script. I didn't think improv comedy would be there, but actually like working it backwards, that actually makes more sense.
Yeah, no, I do like writing and stuff, but the improv is just something that it was so... Improv is kind of good for lazy people because you just show up and you don't have to prepare anything.
Well, it's my whole life.
Exactly. Yeah. You just wing it. But eventually you're like, I'm doing these stage performances for 75 to 100 people and you have nothing to show for it other than just like getting better comedic timing and becoming a better actor and better stage presence. And I was like, you know, let's put something on the internet. We know there's a group of fantasy football diehards. Maybe they would enjoy this fantasy football adjacent content.
Yeah. It's actually kind of similar. I came to realizing that I would be good at podcasts in a similar way. I did competitive speech in high school and college. That was like what my scholarship was for. And the two events that I did really well at were the ones that required the least amount of preparation. They were like, you would get a topic, you'd have 30 minutes to do the research and then speak on that extemporaneously. And so that's basically been all of my like preparation for being a professional podcaster. And at the time I didn't realize that that's what I was preparing for, but the links between the two are pretty great.
Oh yeah. And it's also funny how those things kind of inform, because I don't have opinions and takes about so many things, or at least strong things. So to watch you guys, I just kind of sit back with, you know, the popcorn gif and watch you guys argue about all this stuff. Whereas I funnel everything through just like a comedic lens. Like I just view everything. This is funny. This is ridiculous. So I don't have that like get in there with the sword and start battling, but I love enjoying it from a distance.
I'd like to think that I've transitioned into being more funny than just being like a take machine. But sometimes I just cannot help myself. Like I've noticed on these podcasts I do with Mayo, he'll bring up things that I like know about and have opinions about, but I'm not nearly as educated about compared to like football or whatever. And I cannot stop myself from just spewing takes left and right. Like I just was born to be a take machine.
It's really hard to be a funny take machine all the time, because eventually you start fighting for something you actually believe. And it's really hard to be funny when you're, you know, stridently.
When you're passionate. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I just like, I don't know. I love consuming all the information. I love the, you know, the debates, the does defenses matter. Like I love that all as an intellectual exercise, but I'm just not smart enough or have strong enough feelings to actually get in there and battle. And I just see so many internet fights like turd. I mean, even yesterday when you were triggering the Patriots fans.
So good. People just love like middle-aged white guys. You insult Tom Brady, it's like you called their kid ugly.
Yeah, and that was actually a tweet from you that was like clearly trolling, and like anything, there's like a nugget of truth to it, but you're just like, you know, poking the bear, and it's just like they bought it. And it's like, guys, Davis, how are you falling for this right now? How are you getting worked up about this?
It's like people who respond to draft cheats tweets seriously.
Yeah, It's so, I mean, even Denny Carter just yesterday had the tweet where he took a photo of an empty Gillette bin at CVS. And then everyone's quote retweeting him being like, yeah, you really stuck it to him. Like not even realizing that Denny's doing this meta performance art bit and is clearly okay with the Gillette ad. But people just love getting worked up and indignant. They legit enjoy it. They seem miserable, but deep down they're doing it because they love it.
They do. And Denny's performance as like the character of CD Carter 13 is just like, it's gotten to like some of the most impressive performance art I've ever seen. Like the video he posted on Christmas Eve of just like singing along to a song in his basement on his pool table, pretending like he was at a Christmas party with a skeleton. Like that belongs in like a modern art exhibit.
He's mastered it. He's so good at it. And I mean, tell me if you think the same, but I've even noticed a shift in, you know, Silva, you know, 2 years ago, he was a straight shooter about
just
everything.
Just information.
And now he will troll in there with the best of them. He has some of these one-off lines where I didn't even think I'm not saying I don't think he's funny. I just didn't think he was capable on his large of a scale of making those kind of jokes and trolls. And I think we've like opened it up now where everyone isn't taking themselves quite as seriously. And that's a good place to be in, I think.
Just like if you're going to be involved in something as like a fantasy's supposed to be fun. And I think taking yourself like way too seriously in fantasy football is like maybe it works for some people, but it would never work for me.
Yeah. And I think I always think back to, you know, the original, like, oh, if you're sports betting, like the best guys in the world are winning at what, like 50 percent edge.
Sure, yeah.
And I always think about that for fantasy too. It's like, let's say we map on that, you know, percentage edge for the true grinders trying to grind out an edge. It's like, that edge that we're fighting for is so small, and we're arguing almost always about 1 to 2 percentage points of edge in these.
Definitely. Yes. The things that we are arguing about are this big one that I've been arguing about with people who are way smarter than me for like 3 months now has been like, how good is Josh Reynolds relative to Cooper Kupp? And it probably is like legit to the Rams offense, like a 5 percentage point difference, but it comes up like every week.
Yeah. Well, what happens, of course, right, is these players get aligned with, I get nauseating saying the word personal brand, but they get tied up with that. And sure. Then so there's this emotional investment in the take too. It's not, you're not just attacking the prospect profile of Josh Reynolds. You're attacking me and things I like in my worldview. So it gets all warped and tangled, and then feelings get at it. People, it's just,
yeah, if anyone says anything bad about Jeff Janis, it's like they're basically just telling me they like don't value me as a person. I take it super personally. Like I cannot stand for any Jeff Janis slander.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, of all the scenarios, you know, him kind of flaming out like this is probably the second best scenario to him just crushing, right? Because if he was kind of middling and never like bounced around and still held a job but never exploded, he becomes more of a cult hero, the fact that he just disappeared, and we can say like what would have been, you know?
Hopefully there's a comeback.
You're still holding out hope?
I mean, he's in the gym, dude. He just posted an Instagram video this morning of him trying to lift 605 pounds.
Dude, do you know, like,
he couldn't quite get it, but still.
Did you listen to like the podcast Missing Richard Simmons, where that guy like tried to hunt down Richard Simmons to figure out why he, you know, got away from the public eye?
I did not.
I was just thinking like a really fun, like either video or, and I kind of did this, Mans did it with like chasing down Tom Dwan, but it'd be like, we go out into the sticks and it's like Davis Maddock looking for Jeff Janis and just like going door to door and like going into these hunting stores and being like, have you seen Jeff Janis? And I think that would be good content, Davis, if you want to go to wherever he's living these days.
I mean, I'm trying to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm telling you, you got to go look for him, right? You got to do this in person.
Well, no, he follows me on Twitter, and like every once in a while, like this is serious. Like once every 3 months, he'll send me a DM and be like, "Blah, we'll do it. Like we're figuring it out, whatever." And then he won't get back to me for like another 3 months.
Yeah, you'll get him. He's your white whale, but you will get him, and it'll be glorious.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So little transition here. You do a podcast with Pat Corain about a journey that you guys took through an entry in the FFPC. How did it go this year? What was the team? Are you going to run it back next year? Co-managing a team, all of that good stuff.
Yeah, this was our third year playing in the FFPC main event. Pat and I met doing the Fantasyland podcast. I guess that was 2016. And we, one, an episode idea we had is like, why don't we sign up for the main event and then kind of chronicle it? And we did that into like one or two episodes. We did a high stakes episode and a co-managing episode. And then we just decided to keep running it back. So this year was our third year. The first 2 years were kind of disasters. We didn't make the playoffs either year. We went zero RB. The problem wasn't our RBs not hitting. It was our wide receivers not hitting, which was a weird way to do zero RB. Like somehow we nailed Alvin Kamara in the 13th round last year and still didn't make the playoffs. So
pretty impressive.
I don't know how you do that, but we managed away. And then this year was our first like semi-successful year. We got third place in our individual 12 team league. So we actually made some money back, but just barely missed out on making the big finals where you're eligible for that $250,000 prize.
That's pretty similar to actually what's happened to me. Each of the last 2 years ran super hot with running backs. Like this last year I had James Conner on most of my teams, Sony Michel for those games where he was good. My wide receiver takes this year really and truly could not have been worse. Like I had Demaryius Thomas on like every team. Like, yeah. and he was active like every week. So just like had to start. Like, and he's such a loser.
And I mean, but with that stuff too, it's like, you know, if you play in 7 to 8, I normally play in 7 to 8 season long leagues, you know, yeah. Dynasty, high stake, friend leagues or whatever. And your portfolio spread out enough that if you have a good year of just the guys you're in on, like you're overall going to have a good year. But when you only play in one high stakes league, you put this pressure and then there's still obviously the variance of injuries and just whiffing on picks. And so it can be agonizing when you're like, you're so close to a good team. And then you just made one mistake. It's like to realize your skill set, you probably need to play 8 to 10 high stakes leagues, but who the hell is doing that? I mean there are
some
people.
Some of these guys are doing that because they know they have to get that many in for it to like be a worthwhile exercise.
Yeah. I mean, even just for our high stake, Pat and I would spend, you know, 1 to 2 hours talking through waivers. And that was for one league. And these guys will go through, you know, like the David Hubbard and Nelson Sousa and Chad Schroeder, these kind of high stakes crushers. I mean, they put so much time. It is a full-time job. For me, that would suck the fun out of it, but I'm sure they're closer to realizing their skill through that investment.
Well, I mean, I guess the thing for me would just be, I would so much rather dedicate all of that capital to DFS where like it's turning around quicker. There's just a more immediate ROI basically.
Yeah, I like having the variety, and I agree. I enjoy DFS most of all above all of it, but it is fun to have that one big sweat, like when you're watching and, you know, you kind of forget about all the other guys on your season-long teams, and you're like, this is the guy. These are the guys I want to do well because the financial upside is so high.
Well, there is something that's definitely nice about, you know, if you do 50 best balls and you have one high stakes league and 8 seasonal leagues and you co-own a team and you're playing DFS and you're betting on games, you'll always find something to salvage on a Sunday. Like there's always at least one thing you can be like, okay, well, like at least I sweated, like at least that's going well.
Exactly. That's all you need is that one nugget. Although I don't know about you. I think I've worked on it. I'm sure it's something everyone struggles with where I can have one of those weeks where you win in 6 out of 7 of your leagues. You have a good DFS day and you still like focus on the one league you didn't win. And you're like, well, I should have made this swap. And it's like, how messed up are our brains that we focus on that one negative thing and can't take away the overall enjoyment of a good week?
I mean, I focus on DFS first. Like DFS is just going to be the thing because that'll have the most like monetary impact on me. And I do like most of my podcasts about DFS, but then I sweat my, you know, $50 entry fee league with my friends from high school, the hardest of all my leagues, because I've never won it. And they all just trash me so hard in our group chat because they're like, this is your job. Like you got to be better. This is embarrassing. And like my team is horrible in that league. Like I made the playoffs, I think, twice ever.
That is the worst, too, when you get the expectation of people thinking you should be good because you spend all day doing this stuff. At least I have a better excuse. I'm like, I do fantasy football comedy. I never said I'm a fantasy football guru here, so I should get an out. But people still expect you to win every one of your leagues.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing, I sweat the football guys contest, which is basically like it's on a salary cap and you set it up at the beginning of the year and it runs for the whole year and the winner gets $35K. And this was the farthest my team has ever made it. And that's like an elimination challenge. Like half the field gets cut every week. And I made it to week 14 this year, which was like, that was a very sick sweat. I was very into that.
Yeah. And I saw you talking about that on Twitter throughout the season. And I think things too, that have just like a slightly different format too,
can be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw, I mean, you had a great year with the sports betting. I'm sure that was a fun sweat for you too, seeing if you could stay ahead of Colin Cowherd in sports betting.
That was huge. And I mean, not going to lie, that's pretty valuable from like a branding perspective. I probably should have been making more of the picks in the playoffs though, because I'm realizing I probably could catch the guy in first if I went at like 65% in the playoffs, but I was horrible in the wild card round. So probably, are you getting into sports betting at all? Is the man's going to have, is he going to be making 5-star gold, like lock picks of the week?
Well, you know, Mans, I kind of shifted it over. I made videos for lineups.com this year as Uncle Mans. He asked me if I would do kind of a adjacent character. So it was different. So Uncle Mans did the sports betting picks. And yeah, I know I wrestle with it too. I do enjoy sports betting, not to the extent of DFS. And it's this kind of thing where you know, everyone's talking about, well, it's all moving in this direction. And, you know, everyone's already making the jokes about how everyone's a sports betting tout now. I don't know. I'm dipping my feet in the water. I've been doing some live streams with Court Smith, who does Bet the Prop. I think the prop betting stuff will be the most fun, just because it's basically DFS adjacent, with identifying those specific player scenarios. So yeah, I'm interested in it. It's a lot less of a time commitment, just from, you know, I got super busy making a bunch of content in season, and a lot of the DFS research, which I enjoy doing, just got pushed to the side. And it's just so much quicker to research, you know, a player prop or individual situations than building all of these lineups. So I'm definitely intrigued and want to get into it more, but it's not like I'm going to abandon everything else, you know?
Yeah. Can you speak about co-managing a team? Because I always wonder what other people's experience is with this. I co-manage a team in a high stakes league with Michael Salfino from The Athletic every year. It's this league put together by Mark Stopa and like the RotoWire and the Yahoo guys. And did I say Wahoo? Yahoo, the Yahoo guys. And it's like a trip to do a co-managing team, obviously, especially with Salfino in particular. It's an extra bit of a trip. But what are you and Pat's like routine like in terms of co-managing a team?
Yeah, I'd say each year we've gotten better at it. I mean, the first year we did it, you know, it's on the podcast, but we went out for the draft and we had, you know, two or three nights before our draft when we were in Vegas and we were doing interviews and stuff, but we would spend our night like in the hotel room, not going out in Vegas, but arguing over our draft targets. And, you know, Pat is very sharp. He's the classic like contrarian RotoViz debater type. And he's even more analytical than me. So, but I think I consume a lot more fantasy information than him. So I have like a good gauge of the pulse and the temperature. So we would bat heads of, butt heads about different things. And we used to be way more argumentative. And this year it was mellowed out to the point where we would do our waiver discussion live while we were recording the podcast, just because we didn't have enough time.
I mean, that's good content.
It is. You know, at first we thought, oh, is this us just being lazy? And then it seemed like people really enjoyed it because we were like, Pat, we have 5 more minutes. How much are we bidding on Dwayne Washington or, you know, whoever it was? But yeah, I think it's about finding that medium of giving your opinion, letting the other person give theirs, and you know, like anything, finding that compromise. And a lot of times, one of us kind of just waves the white flag and says, I don't feel as strongly about this as you do. And then we inevitably make a bet just to like settle it. So we had some weird bets this year, like Chris Hogan versus Nick Vinette, PPR points rest of the season. Like just
that's
weird.
A good one.
Yeah, you just have to settle some of these arguments. But I overall really love it because my thought is, you know, the old saying, no one cares about your fantasy team. But if you're co-managing, there literally is someone who cares. And so you get to celebrate those wins with someone else when otherwise it's a solitary exercise and no one gives a shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Although I will say I've had good responses to like bringing decisions like that to the people. Dink and Leone and I recorded us doing an FFPC best ball draft, which was like 4 hours long. And we just recorded the process of us drafting this team online. And people thought that was fascinating. But of course, people are so much more interested in drafting than in any other aspect of fantasy.
Yeah, it's funny you say that too. I think I need to loosen up to the like, oh, nobody gives a shit about your team because, you know, they do. It's, you know, we're now in the esports era. Everyone's Twitch streaming. Everyone wants to know your process. And it's more so the reason though, it's not that they're interested in your team. They're interested in you and how you think about your team.
Right.
Because ultimately, it's all personality driven. The whole only reason people tuned in to your best ball podcast is because they wanted to hear like you and Dink and Leone bust each other's balls. And like that was why they tuned in. And the fantasy was just a vehicle for that.
Yeah, people really, I guess you're right. They're like sort of generally interested in fantasy football. They like to hear the names. They like to know all that. It's a familiar subject top. Like they would rather us talk about that than our favorite TV shows. But probably 80% of the people would just tune in to listen to us talk about TV for an hour.
Yeah, and I mean when people watch a Ninja live stream, they want to hang out with Ninja for 4 hours, right? It's not that they like love Fortnite more than anything in their life.
I don't know. I think actually people that consume Fortnite content I play a lot of FIFA Ultimate Team, which is like the second most popular video game on Twitch most of the time, but people are not even as serious about that as they are about Fortnite. Like people who are into Fortnite are into Fortnite.
Right, but think about it this. I'm sure there's millions of Fortnite streamers that are super bland and have no personality and no one's tuning
definitely.
To watch them. So it's the combination of the subject matter intersection and having like an interesting personality.
Yeah. Do you consume any Twitch content?
No, I don't. I like doing the live streams. Like I do the live streams for the man's videos on YouTube and stuff. I'll watch like sometimes when poker players will have like highlights of their stream on YouTube. I'll watch a 5-minute highlight video, but to me, I just do not have the time and I guess the interest to watch that kind of content. And I listen to so much of my stuff via podcast.
Right.
Barely watching stuff at my desktop. I was even talking with Denny the other day. I was like, dude, I'll subscribe to your Patreon if I can have an individual feed for the podcast, because I'm like, otherwise I'm never going to listen to the audio on desktop. So I think
that's how Patreon works. If you subscribe to someone on Patreon and you go to the actual page, you get an RSS feed to plug into your podcast app.
Well, that's not what I'm realizing. I was so ignorant to Patreon, but then, you know, I was even talking with the FanShare guys this year because I subscribed to them and they didn't have an RSS feed for their podcast. They would do the ownership podcast with like Elliot Chris and stuff. And I wanted to listen to that. And they're like, yeah, we just haven't figured it out. We don't want people sharing the private, you know, subscriber owner link. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm never listening to this podcast then.
I mean, pretty like, I guess like a lot of people probably don't realize that either. I'm realizing because we have a Discord for the TakeCast now.
Yeah.
And I think most of the people there listen to the podcast straight on the Patreon app.
Yeah.
And I'm just, if you're listening to this and you don't realize it, I mean, just go ahead and message me where you can DM me or message me on the Discord. I will show you. It's not that hard to figure out how to get the RSS feed into your podcast player.
Yeah, it's funny you say that too, because there was, and I'm not saying people are stupid, but there's this guy on Instagram who's I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's like an Instagram fantasy football guy, and he does all of his content basically solely through Instagram. And I follow him kind of with an ironic sense of detachment, just because he's such a character. But for like 2 years, like every other post was just saying, DM me and I'll show you exactly how to subscribe to my podcast. Like he would walk people individually through how to open up their iPhone. And I was like, dude, everyone knows how to subscribe to a podcast. But I think he actually converted all these people who just didn't actually know how to do it.
I mean, yeah, definitely. Because a lot of the people that consume fantasy football content, like our market includes, yeah, like a lot of like hip, like 20 something like people like hardcore millennials who spend all their time online, but also like my dad and his friends love fantasy football content and they listen to the same, like they still buy the magazines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's kind of cool. I think there's now kind of a medium for however you want. And, you know, a lot of guys enjoy camping out on Twitch and stuff. I want my stuff to go, you know, in podcast form, but now we're at a point where you can really get it however you want.
Well, I actually, a lot of the times what I'll do is, I mean, obviously, like I've talked about this on this show, but I mean, I listen to like 30 podcasts, but there will be times where I'm like, you know what? I don't really feel like listening to my seventh basketball podcast of the day, or like, oh, I'm not going to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast today. And like, so like I'll go to the gym and I'll just put a Twitch stream on my phone and lock the screen, and I'll just have the audio playing in my, like while I'm there.
Yeah. Well, sometimes there are those moments like that, I think that you're describing, where you kind of almost, it's almost servicing as white noise to you, where you're kind of focusing on other stuff and it's just kind of a soothing back. You know, I hear people say they fall asleep to podcasts, and it's not an insult to the podcast creator. It's just something to accompany them and let their brain shut off.
I pretty much fall asleep listening to a podcast every night.
So the thing I always trouble with that, how do you logistically do that? Do you have the iPod earbuds, or like what kind of earbuds do you use for that?
So I'll just put my phone right on the bedside table, and I'm on the right side of the bed and I have my right headphone in. And when I'm ready to go to sleep, I just take it right out and put it on the desk.
Okay. There you go. I think I need, cause I always get uncomfortable with the earbud, but I think the one-sided, I guess you got it. I think I toss and turn too much to pull that off.
Yeah, but it's like, and it's just like a passive consumption of information. Like, not like I'm retaining everything, but like if you listen to 20 fantasy football podcasts in a week passively, you'll pick up on a lot of like good granular information.
Yeah, I do feel like the thing I wrestle with is I end up listening to probably like 90% of the DFS podcasts throughout the week. And partly because I enjoy the, you know, as the consumer, hanging out with people. I like hearing what you're saying, what Silva's saying, what Levitan's saying. And, but then I get trapped in the kind of the take lock of like everyone solidifying on these plays. So I kind of reversed my strategy a little bit this year, where I'd save the podcast for like Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
And that way I was like reading Silva's matchup column, you know, reading the buy low model, doing the research ahead of time and trying to form some independent thoughts before I let everyone be like, well, Ted Ginn's a great play this week. Ted Ginn's a great play. And now it's like, I have to have Ted Ginn.
You got to get Ted Ginn in.
Yeah. I feel like that's one of the hardest things.
I don't listen to as much DFS stuff as most people do. Probably like more of the content that I consume is like, I try to consume like non-sports stuff via podcast. Yeah. And I try to consume like, cause I don't get to watch as much basketball as I would like, but I mean, you know, I love the NBA. So like I try and consume like more of my, non-football media there. Whereas like I'm getting football all the time while I'm working, I'm getting football all the time on Twitter. So like I listen to less fantasy football podcasts than most people do probably.
Yeah. And I'm honestly looking forward to the off season. I ended up settling into a really good routine last year where I hardly listen to any football podcasts in the off season. And I start reading books again, and my mind, everything just like opens up, it, you know, in the season, as you know, it just feels like this total sprint and you're just like cranking out information.
I mean, it's just such a, it's like the, I know people never want to listen to fantasy football writers talk about how their job is a grind. Like they people just really hate that. And I'm not saying it's not any more or less of a grind than working in an office or anything, but having that single-minded focus for like 4 months at a time is like, it's like a pretty unique experience.
And I would say, I always push back again. I hate the word grind, and I get it for jobs.
Oh, like, I really hate the word grind.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's always hilarious when people are saying they're grinding a hobby, and I'm like, you can be burnt out or overextended, but like if you're not getting paid to do this, you know, or enough to like make a living off of it, you're doing it because you enjoy it. And so I don't know, at least for me, I try to only say yes or do things that I enjoy doing. And yeah, I might end up having an overly busy week, but I'm still doing everything because in a vacuum, I enjoy doing it. I just think it's always so silly. It's like, dude, well, if you're so burnt out or you hate the grind of doing DFS research, don't play DFS that week. I never understood that.
I mean, sometimes I will take like an NBA slate off just because I'm like, man, I just want to go to dinner and just like kind of hang out and like, you know, walk. Like I cannot be glued to my Apple Watch, like waiting to see like if Anthony Davis is going to play or not.
Yeah. And all of that too, at least for me, everything like leads one thing into the next too, where when you set up those good habits and you don't, I don't know, I feel like I have such more of a clear mind when I approach things on a given, you know, any given day of being like, do I actually need to play DFS this week or whatever? I don't know. I just don't, I push back against the notion that this stuff has to be a chore or a grind.
I am like pretty addicted to DFS though.
Yeah.
Like, which I think is like, I don't think people really talk about that. Like that they don't talk about being addicted to DFS, like being addicted to gambling, but like, I guess, so in like a lot of the end of 2017, beginning of 2018, I was not playing very much. And now I'm like back, grinding. I'm back like playing like pretty much full time. Like I'll play 30 slates a week. Like I'm grinding NBA Showdown. I'm playing tiers. Like, and if I like take a day off, it like feels very bizarre.
Well, yeah. And I also think about it though, from your, like you're hanging out in these Slack chats with all these DFS and your, you know, players and your coworkers, and you're surrounded by this information. It's right. Probably like a trigger at all times. Well, someone's like, Mo Harkless, if that's...
Yeah, someone's like, Kyle Lowry's going to be out, like Fred VanVleet, sick play. And I'm like, yeah. Well, I can't let everyone else profit from Fred VanVleet, and I'm not going to.
I know. Yeah, and like sometimes, and that's another thing where sometimes I get jealous. I'm like, oh, I wish I was hanging out in these Slack chats or whatever, but I don't even, like the Slack chats I am in, I don't even ever check on them because I don't know, I'm not saying I'm like too busy for it. I don't have the time. I guess I am saying I'm too busy for it, but I think if I was around it to the extent you are, and people are like, oh, this guy's a good play, I'm like, well, I got it. I'd be losing money if I didn't make a lineup.
No, that really is what I think. Like, I think about it in the sense of like, I'm just like, I'm losing an opportunity to turn the money I do have into more money.
Yeah. And I think that, and that's how it all started when you do all this fantasy football research and you're like, why am I playing in one league? There's so much variance. I need to play in 10 leagues to realize this research. So I think that just extends to everything of life. And you're like, well, I really like Tyreek Hill's matchup this week, so I got to play the player prop. I got to play the Chiefs over. I got to have him in 100% of my life. And it's just like you get spread so thin.
This is actually something I realize I'm missing EV on, but player props are actually easier than playing DFS or betting on lines because the limits are lower. But it's not like I'm never placing a $5,000 bet on a game. So like, what does a low limit matter to me? Like a $15 bet is like that's like two head-to-head games, right? Like that's but the rate of winning a player prop, like especially given how good some of the projections are now and how bad some lines are made, like I should be betting player props every day.
Oh yeah. And I'm really getting into it. And it was funny. I just did my annual Vegas trip with my college buddies. We always go for divisional weekend and we normally just bet the spreads and over under and like two game parlays, all that stuff. But this year, because I've been doing so many player props, I was like, look, guys, I'll make the bet. You guys will Venmo me and I'll make the bets on these player props each game.
Did you guys print?
Yeah. I basically for the group, I did one player prop for each game just so we had like a big group sweat because that's kind of like the fun of it. And yeah. I went 4-0 on the player props I suggested. And I mean, I'm sure there's some, you know, luck to that, but it's also...
What are the limits? Like what casino were you at?
I was playing, I was on Bovada. I don't know if we're allowed to mention an offshore.
Oh, no. Bro, come on. We're on the Takecast. We might be on the Fantasy Sports Network now, but they're never stopping me from mentioning offshore books.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, I was putting down like $400 to $500 bets on these props because it was like, you know, for our group bet, I wasn't putting that kind of action down on my own. But yeah, they all got through. I would assume, I think I looked in their settings. I want to say $500 was.
$500 sounds like it would be the max for an offshore book. And if you beat them up too bad, they're just not going to let you do it anymore.
I know that is, and I hope I have that problem, but you know, I hear like, you know, Sean Corner and, you know, a lot of these prop bet guys that'll start to get their limits are like $75 on some of these props,
for me, because DFS is not my DFS and sports betting is like, I mean, yes, I play more volume than like average Joe, but like, I'm not getting $50,000 down a month. Like if I can pay myself like a decent bonus every year around Christmas time with my DFS winnings, that's cool for me. Like if I can buy, you know, some nice stuff with my, like, but I'm not doing this for a living. So why do I care if my limit's $75?
Right. Well, and the other fun thing about props is, you know, when you're – so, like, a good example is, like, I played Michael Gallup in DFS this past weekend, and I had the Michael Gallup receiving yard prop over 36 and a half yards. And with DFS, right, you get greedy. You want every point. You want more catches. You want more touchdowns. Like, it's uncapped. Like, you would need him to go for 400 yards and four TDs to win the tournament. So, you always want more. Mm-hmm. With that prop – it's like he got to 36 yards and I was freaking out
because
I was
like, and you're satiated. You're like, I'm good.
Yes. And like, we're all losing our mind because Michael Gallup catches a bomb to like crush the 36 point over and it's done and it's over. And it's I think it's a more healthy sweat than the DFS of like, I want more catches. Where is he? Why isn't he out on this drive?
Yeah. Okay. So actually I want to do the man stuff last, cause we mentioned getting into like positive life habits. So for people who don't know, you're pretty ripped, bro. Like you have a good situation going on, and you suggested to me via DM that you do intermittent fasting, which actually Mayo has talked about on the show as well. So as someone who is pretty much always willing to try out like any sort of dietary thing just to see what happens, explain to me intermittent fasting and like the science as you understand it behind it.
Yeah. And I should also preface it. Well, partly why I want to do this is because people have messaged me and asked me about it. And I kept meaning to like write an article or just something about, you know, what I do just to give people an idea. And then I thought, oh, this could be a good way to do it and save me having to write an article or something. But yeah, I discovered it, I think it was like last March, and it, you know, I'd come back from a trip and you're feeling bloated and, you know, having drank and eaten too much.
Sure.
I don't know where I stumbled across it. It was probably some Tim Ferriss podcast or, you know, something like that. And the reason I think it immediately spoke to me was because in a lot of ways was a glorified way of saying you just skip breakfast. And yeah. I was never a big breakfast person anyway. So I was like, oh, I could probably do this without too much sacrifice. But kind of then what I started to discover was when I started to do it intentionally, you know, when I would skip breakfast otherwise and then get late in the afternoon and then I'd go eat something crappy because I was so hungry.
Right.
But I realized intentional about it and I planned ahead and I had a big salad in the afternoon that was healthy and was going to fill me up, that it wasn't hard for me. And there were so many benefits. I guess the science, the whole logic behind it is, you know, after 15 or 16 hours, your body stops burning like the glucose and the carbohydrates that you've eaten, and it switches over and starts burning fat. And, you know, that turns into the ketones. So basically you're trying to get into a state of ketosis, which is what all the keto diet guys are doing. But I just found intermittent fasting is like a way easier way to accomplish that. So yeah, I know I definitely start rambling, and I'm always careful to evangelize about it too much just because it perfectly suited kind of my lifestyle habits,
Sure. But
it's just such a simplistic way. And I think the reason it took so long to get popular was because it's hard to make money off of intermittent fasting.
It's hard to make money off of telling people don't eat breakfast.
Yeah. So I think, but what was interesting to me is this kind of intermittent fasting is really popular in like the poker world and in the crypto space. I see those guys always talking about.
People in poker are always trying to look for the next thing to like balance themselves out and provide some like clarity and clear-mindedness in their life. And the same for crypto, because it's just such a weird chaos world that you live in.
Yeah, but I guess I couldn't, because there is so much overlap, but I can't figure out, why do you think that kind of the health, like optimizing every bit of your life, hasn't spilled over to like the DFS world as much, or at least I don't see it?
I mean, people in DFS in general are just like not as sharp, not as mathematically and analytically oriented. So they don't think of like turning their life that way, though some people do. Like I'm sure if I had Bales on to talk about this stuff, he'd have a lot to say about it. Or Kevin Sports Geek, like I'm positive he would have all sorts of stuff like that. Joe Holka, I know he's big into like life optimization and stuff like that too.
Yeah, Bales is actually funny because he's in great shape. He eats whatever he wants, but he just works out a shit ton. And that was actually one of the other reasons that led me to it, because I was working out a good bunch, but never saw results. And, you know, it was always the whole thing like, you know, you won't get in shape until you change your diet. And for me, it wasn't so much changing the diet, but then just finding eating in that restricted window just really opened up things for me. And it was like pouring gasoline on the fire as far as like the workouts. It was like, whoa, I'm not just maintaining anymore. I'm actually losing body fat and getting stronger?
I go through like cycles. Like I'm always pretty consistent about working out, but like, cause I'm really short. So my weight like super fluctuates based on like how healthy I'm eating. Like if I go real hard on just like a lot of greens and like limiting carbohydrates for a month, like I can like 10 pounds in a month is like not really a problem, but I'll put it all back on and it's super noticeable because it's happening on a 5'5" guy's frame.
Well, and that's also the thing that was really spoke to me about this is it's not a diet. It doesn't feel like something I'm just like, get to the finish line and then I'm done with the diet. Like it is for me such a sustainable thing where, you know, when I go, I went to Vegas with my buddies and I was having like pickup sticks drunk at 3 a.m. in the morning. Like I'm not letting it rule my life, but then my normal routine when I'm just at home, just a typical day, I can just fall right back into this. And I know I'm not eating breakfast, I'm having a big late lunch, and I'm having an early big dinner, and then I'm not snacking, and I'm not having any dessert. And like, to me, just to have those cut, because I don't do moderation well, I'm like all in, like I'm either...
Same. For me, doing a moderate diet of like just trying to cut out like a couple things, I never stick to it. But if I'm like, no, we're doing... Like I've mentioned this on the podcast a bunch of times, but I did the Whole 30, which is just like you're eating meat and vegetables and olive oil. Those are like the things you can consume. Yeah. And I did that. And honestly, after like 4 days, it didn't even suck. Cause I was just like, oh, this is just what I eat now.
Yeah. And it's finding that balance of, I think the thing people have a hard time with is when they have like a crazy weekend or the holidays and it's like, well, this week's a wash. Like, why would I start now? But being able to psychologically know I'm going to snap right back into it and not let any bleed over from like a cheat weekend or enjoying yourself, which you should. Like, I don't like the idea. I was actually listening to it. Do you know the poker player Jason Kuhn?
The poker players I would know would be guys from like 8 years ago, because that was when I was big into poker. Now I just kind of if Empire quote tweets somebody, that's how then I find out about who poker players are now.
Yeah. Well, Jason Kuhn, he's one of the big, like high stakes crushers, plays in the biggest games, all, you know, China, you know, plays with Tom Dwan and Ivy, but he's like big into the IF and, you know, just a gym rat and stuff. But he the psychology for him was he like beats himself up over any beer or like having a slice of pizza. And I can't do that. So I try to just go hot and cold. Like I'm either all in just having a cheat weekend or whatever, or like I'm at home and I'm going to stick to it. And, you know, in the back of my head, I might want a snack or whatever. I'm just like, no, I'm not going to give in. The reward for me is too great to not give in like that. But I think the thing that's hard for me is always there is some sacrifice you have to make and you have to push through some discomfort. But then on the other hand, it's not for everybody. Some people need to have that, you know, that food, those calories in the morning to get them going. And then it's harder to skip dinner.
You still drink coffee with intermittent fasting? Okay.
Yeah. Basically anything that doesn't have enough calories to kind of like kick you out of that fasting state. So I'm doing seltzer right now.
Do you eat from 12 to 6 or 12 to 8?
So I actually do like 2:30 to 6:30 is my eating. But when I started, and if anyone does want to try it, I definitely recommend starting with that wider window. Like you said, like a 12 to 8 would be a great place to start. And then as you feel more comfortable, you start shrinking it, because basically anything over 16 hours is then just gravy. The longer you extend it past that, the more fat you're burning.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I always think of it like the analogy when they're like, you know, when you have a bunch of money in the bank and you're like, you're not working for your money, your money's working for you. Like that's
how your diet's working for you.
Yeah. I can just be at my desk and I'm literally burning fat because my body doesn't have any other glucose or sugar to burn.
You know what? We're going to take the man stuff behind the paywall. This has been good enough. This has been a good 50 minutes. So we're going to go to the Patreon for the man stuff.
I kind of like that. I like that plan. Yeah. The diehards can go after the man.
Yeah, the diehards can get the man stuff if they want it. So, but before we get out of here, in terms of like, so we're talking about a lot of like life optimization and stuff. Do you have anything that you do for trying not to be blue screened to death? Like I ask everyone who comes on the show for this, like, what are your attempts to disconnect like?
Yeah, it's funny too, because I just since, you know, the regular season ended, I've gotten back into my off-season routine. And the big thing I did last year, I started setting my alarm an hour earlier. and I would read for an hour in the morning. So
in the morning, not at night.
Yeah, because
that's pretty interesting.
Well, yeah. So if I read it, I do like reading at night sometimes to help me fall asleep, but I get tired so quickly that I would end up reading like 3 pages in a book like at night and then go to bed. But like I set an alarm on my phone for an hour out, and I just like throw my phone like over on the couch or put it on the counter, and I read for an hour uninterrupted. And last year I read more books than I ever had in my entire life. And you also get that like unplug, but then
you get up at like 6.
I'm kind of fortunate of when I had to go into work. So like I was getting up around like 7:15. So that actually helps that I'm not having to get up like super early, but yeah. I really enjoyed it. And during football season, you know, I get up and I'm like, did my waiver claims go through? I'm going to read the Roto-World Daily Dose.
It's so hard during football season. Like, yeah. And it's like I cannot think of anything possibly like more unhealthy than waking up and like immediately scrolling through my Twitter mentions. But like more often than not, that's how I start my day, which is horrible, man.
It is. No. And it's like the most, and it's that dopamine rush. It's the thing that like, it's like your shot of coffee. Here's my caffeine. Like we're in it. But yeah, making that tweak, and it is, like you said, it's so much easier in the off season where like, I know I'm not, you know, quote unquote missing anything for an hour, and just spending that time to carve out to read, because I wasn't finding that carve out anywhere else.
I mean, you can't just do it at noon.
Yeah. Yeah. So it works out well. And, able to kind of catch up on a bunch of reading that I'd been put. Haruki Murakami is my favorite author, and I had been like, his new book came out in October and it had just been sitting on my shelf. It's
on
like a seven.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I already devoured it like, you know, in a week, because I was just so excited to get back into that routine and not feel like I had to plug in every single morning right away.
I have like 3 books sitting on my shelf, like all from like some of my favorite writers that have been I think I read maybe 4 books total during football season.
Yeah. And I will say, not to like, you know, keep tying everything back to this, but even my mental clarity and my ability to focus has been, you know, magnified by doing the intermittent fasting. I legit feel like clearer in the head and more focused when I do it, because you just don't have, I think, those, you know, those carbs and those sugars that make you sluggish. And I can't recommend it enough. If people are interested, I'm happy to chat about it and maybe find a program that works for you. But also, if you are just looking for resources, the Medium, if you just search intermittent fasting tag on Medium, there's tons of people who have written articles about their experiences, and you can pick and choose what would work best for you.
So probably, and we can end on this, my like biggest observation that's ever helped me with like dieting and working out and like getting in better shape is food is simply energy. It's just something that your body needs. It's like putting gas in a car, and like fetishizing food and thinking of it in like all of these different ways is like, yeah, it's really cool to cook and make good flavors and stuff. And like, that's fun. But at the end of the day, if you have a goal you want to achieve, your body does not need flavor. Your body does not need your meat to be cooked in butter. Like it just needs the fuel to get by. And that's always been very helpful for me when I've been like, no, I'm really serious about this. I want to do this.
Yeah. I always argue with my wife about that, cause I'm totally with you about that. I'm like the, you know, eat to live. And she's like the live to eat. Like she enjoys.
My personality is very live to eat. Like I love going out to eat. I love cooking with like crazy amounts of like butter and I like to go wild, but when I'm trying to be serious, like you can flip the mindset.
And to me, the big distinction, you know, people like calling them like cheat days or cheat weekends or whatever, but whatever you want to call them, it's like, if you're going out to eat with your friends and you want to, the last thing you want to be doing is counting calories, worrying about what's in the, but when you're at home and you can control your environment, it's like,
I completely agree.
What added enjoyment am I going to get from having like 2 beers tonight just by myself? Like I don't need that. But if I'm out with my friends, like I'm not. So it's knowing how you can turn that switch on and off, I think is the big key, and then not letting it bleed over.
Yeah. All right. Well, Peter, thank you very much. If you guys really liked this show and you want to know more about Pete Manzanelli, We're going to take this over to the Patreon right now. But before we go there, let people know where they can find all of the grinded content from Peter Overzet.
Yeah, man. Grinding all those YouTube videos this year. No, yeah, I'm on Twitter at Peter Overzet. I made a ton of videos for 4 for 4 this year. You can check those out on their YouTube and their Twitter. And yeah, otherwise, you know, all the man stuff is up on my YouTube. And yeah, I don't know. We'll be not sure. Last year it was crypto at this time that took hold of everything. Ugh. So I'm not sure what I'm going to be doing for the next few months, but we'll figure it out.